Hello and welcome. You're listening to podcast part one for the lecture Systematic and Uninformed Search. Let's take a look at the agenda on slide two. We will first introduce some basic terminology and important concepts to talk about search problems. Then we look into how we can model search problems. And in the second part of this lecture, which will be talked about in part two of this podcast, we will talk about uninformed search strategies: breadth-first search, depth-first search, depth-limited search, iterative deepening, and finally uniform cost search. On slide three, you see some recommendations for further reading. So we listed here the chapters in the AIMA textbook that we use by Russell and Norwick, and we may essentially deal with the material covered by chapter three, solving problems by searching. On slide four, you see the architecture of the goal-based agent. An agent can perceive the world being in different states. The initial state is the current state of the world, where the agent is now. A goal, or several goals, are properties of the world that we want to hold in a future state of it. These properties are desirable for the agent. And through its sensors, the agent perceives information from the environment. This allows the agent to derive a state description. The agent has background knowledge about how the world can evolve, what actions the agent has as its disposal to change the world. And the agent can also reason to decide what effects its actions have on the state of the world. So this means if the agent sets some goals, then of course the key question for the agent is what actions it should select and do now and in possibly subsequent states to achieve a state of the world where the goals are true. So this leads us directly to discrete state-based search problems, which are described on state five. So these problems can be described by a finite number of states and actions. We consider here single agent problems. So we do not consider changes on the world that are caused by the actions of other agents. The world is therefore static. So it's not changing while our agent is deliberating about the actions it should select to reach a desirable goal state in this world. So this is, for example, different to games where we always have to consider the moves and actions of other agents. So here we consider only the single agent static case. The world is observable, so the agent has access to the relevant knowledge it needs to decide about actions to choose. And each action that the agent can execute is deterministic. It leads to exactly one successor state. So given a state and an action, the successor state as prime is uniquely determined. On slide six, we see the formal definition of state spaces. A state space is described by a six-tuple. So first we define the finite set of states in a set S. Then we define A, which describes the finite set of actions that we have available. We have a cost function. So for each action and state pair, we can define what the costs of these actions are. Usually we consider non-negative costs, which range between zero and some positive number. Furthermore, we define T, which is the transition relation. So given a state S and an action, we can say to which successor state the action will lead. So this we've discussed this already previously. So this means that T is deterministic. So there's at most one successor state for each state action pair. If such a triple S A S prime exists, then we say that A, the action A, is applicable to S. Finally, we define a specific state in our set of states, which we consider as the initial state, and we define a subset of states which describe the goal states. We say that theta has the transition SAS prime if it's part of our transition relation T. We also write as a notation that we introduce a state S, then we have this arrow 2S prime, and on the top we put the action A. If we don't care about the action that leads to a successor state, we simply draw an arrow from S to one of its possible successor states, S prime. If our state base has unit costs, then this means that for all actions and all states, the costs of executing an action in a state is exactly one. So let's look on slide 7 on some example. So you see here a description of a state. So each node in this graph is considered a state. You see on the left the initial state, I. And when you look at the right, we have four goal states with this light blue filling. And between these states, we have edges from a state to another state, which describe the possible transitions. Each transition is marked with an action, and in braces we see the cost of each action. For example, in the initial state, we can execute action A, which has cost 2. We can execute action C, which has cost 3 and leads us to successor state S2. And we can execute action B with cost 4, which leads us to S3. So if you look at this example, you clearly see this is not a problem where we have unit costs of actions, because action costs are quite different. Then we can, for each state, we can determine the set of applicable actions. So in this case, for example, for the initial state, we have A, B, C. If you look, for example, on state 6, which is in the middle at the bottom of the graph, you see that only one action E is applicable, which has cost 0, where we can actually go back to state S3, and then again forward with the same action back to state S6. And we can also ask, do we have a deterministic transition relation here? No, we don't, because if you look at the action G in state SG1, so one of the goal states, you see that the action G can lead us either to goal state SG2, or it can lead us to goal state SG3. So for this state where the action is applicable, it can lead us to two possible successor states, which means it's not deterministic. So slide 8 introduces some more terminology. S prime is a successor of S if we have a transition from S to S prime, and then of course we also call S the predecessor of S prime. S prime is reachable from a state S if there exists a sequence of transitions. So this means we can find a sequence of actions where we introduce the first action in state S0, and then it leads us finally to the desired state of S prime. And in between, we have a number of intermediate states. It can be possible that n is 0, so then S prime is S, so then we have like the empty transition. So for example, the goals are immediately satisfied in the initial state. We call the sequence of actions that is applicable in some state an action pass. And we also speak of a state pass. So actually, when we speak of a pass, we can either pick the sequence of states through which we go from some state S0 to some state Sn, or we can also pick the set of actions that we use to get from some initial state to some goal state. So in that sense, a pass is uniquely determined by either a sequence of states or sequence of actions, because our transition relation is deterministic. The cost of this pass is the sum of the cost of all the actions in the pass. So if we simply say a state S is reachable and we don't give an explicit reference state, then we mean it's reachable from the initial state I. And we say that S is solvable if there is some state S prime, which is a goal state, and this state S prime is reachable from S. Otherwise, S is a dead end. So S is a solvable state if from this state the goals are still reachable. Otherwise, it's a dead end, or also a so-called trap state. On slide 9, we talk about state-based solutions. So let's assume that we have a state-based description given as the sixth tuple, and let S be some state in our state set. A solution for S is an action pass from S to S prime, such that in S prime the goals are reached or satisfied. This solution is optimal if its costs is minimal among all solutions for S. So you can imagine that given some state S, we find an action sequence that leads us to the goal state, and we may find more than one action pass that actually leads us to one or several, or yeah, one of the states where the goals are satisfied. And these paths can have different costs. So we are very often interested in minimal cost paths. And then we call a minimal cost path an optimal solution. A solution for the initial state is called a solution for theta, and is denoted by rho. The set of all solutions for theta is denoted by S upper index theta. If a solution exists, then we say theta is solvable, otherwise it's unsolvable. Let's again look at our example graph. So on slide 10, we ask some more questions. So are all states reachable? So does this mean that we find a state action transition or pass to a state or any state in this graph, starting from the initial state? And we can clearly say no, not all states are reachable. Look at state S7. S7 at the bottom right of this graph only has outgoing edges. So once in a state, we can execute action F or action H. But the state is never reachable because no incoming edge leads to the state. Are all states solvable? So can we actually from any state reach the goal state or some goal state? No, clearly not. Look at the upper left of this graph. You see state S2. State S2 is a dead end. If we decide to pick action C3 or C with cost 3 in the initial state, then we end up in state S2. And from there, we can never get away again. What are the optimal solutions to this problem? Well, and for example, we have B, then E can be executed as often as we like, followed by C, then E again, and then G as often as we like again, because actions E and G have cost 0, so they do not increase the costs. So if you follow this graph, we start in the initial state I, we select action B, which leads us to state S3. From there, we can loop through this cycle by this action E as often as we like, because it doesn't add any costs to our solution. We go back, in fact, to state S3. From there, we can pick selection C, because if you look at the graph, state S6 is also a state from where no further action would directly lead us to a goal state. So we go back to S3. Then we pick action C, which has cost 3. Then we can pick again action E, cost 0. And this, in fact, takes us to goal state 1. In this state, we can apply action G as often as we want because we only move between the goal states. But once we've actually decided to go to state SG2, which can also happen because the transition system is non-deterministic, we will actually be in this goal state and cannot do anything else. The cost of this pass is 7. And I invite you to take this example as an exercise, look at other potential solutions that lead you to a goal state and see what costs they have. Slide 11 introduces another example. So here we have the so-called AIDS puzzle. We have a grid. We have 9 cells in this grid. 8 of these cells are covered by tiles, and we have some empty cell. This allows us to move the tiles. So, for example, if you look at the start or initial state, then we actually see that we can here move tile 5 to the right, and we can move tile 6 to the left. We can not do anything else. These are the two possible moves. A tile can only be moved in a horizontal way or in a vertical way. So on the left side, we see the goal state. We want to sort all the tiles such that the empty cell is in the upper left corner, and then we actually see the numbers ordered as displayed in this picture. So what is the set of possible states? I give you a few hints, and then I also invite you to fill out this chart in a formal way by looking again at the definitions we went through on the previous slides and applying them here to this example. So the sets of states is in fact all possible configurations of the tiles. This is one possible description. Another possible description is that you just look at the position of the empty cell. And then but also you need to record in the state description where the other numbers are placed. So think about how you can actually do this in an efficient way. The initial state is, of course, again, the specific description of the tiles that we see on the left-hand side. And you also see the set of actions. Here again, you have possible choices how you can describe this. For example, you can define an action for each possible tile. So you can, in principle, move the number 7 up and down and left to right. Of course, in certain states, so many of these actions will not be applicable. So you will always go through a large set of actions and check if for the ones that you can execute. A much more compact representation is to simply consider the moves of the empty cell. So we imagine that we just move this empty cell, and by moving this empty cell, these other tiles also move. For example, here, if we say we move the empty cell upwards, then actually tile 2 moves downwards. So this is one possible vertical action that we can also execute in this initial state. And we can also move the empty cell downwards, which means that tile 3 moves upwards. So in fact, we have 4 applicable actions in the initial state. The goal state is again a description of the position of the empty cell and the tiles. Pass costs. We can, of course, think about the costs that each move has. So here in this application example, it seems very natural to assign unit costs to each move because there's not a difference in the effort for executing the various moves. So when we assume the description where we have the empty cell moving, then this always costs us 1 independently of the direction. So this gave you already a first idea on how we can formulate search problems. Let's look at slide 12. We have, in principle, three possible ways on how we can describe search problems. We can first develop a so-called black box description. So this essentially means to construct an API that will help us to access the state space and simulate the execution of actions. I will look into this subsequently in more detail. Then we can have a white box description. A white box description is an accessible but compact representation of states, actions, and goal tests. For example, we can be given a map of a certain area, and we look for paths on this map to travel from one state to the other. Finally, we can have an explicit representation, which means to really represent all the states of a problem in an explicit state space graph. So let's look at these three possible formulations in greater detail. Slide 13. So how can such an API be developed? So you see here, for example, in the upper right, a possible data structure. So of course we need to define a node in a graph by executing actions. You can imagine that we travel from node to node, and we have the actions on the marked on the transitions of this graph on the edges. So in this node, we want to keep the state representation in a compact form. We want to have access to all possible actions that are applicable in this state. For each action, we need to know its action costs, but we also want to know from where we came. So the node has actually parent nodes and it has child nodes, and we also keep in a node the cost of the current path. So I'd assume that we are looking for paths from the initial state to the goal state. So by executing actions, we will have reached this node in the graph, and we have accumulated a certain amount of costs because we've taken a specific path through our potential state space. So when we design such an API, we of course need various methods to access our black box description. For example, we have a function or method initial state, which returns the initial state of the problem. There must be a goal test, because whenever we reach a node and we look at its state description, we want to test if we have reached already the goals or if we need to travel further in the graph. So this goal test returns simply a boolean. It's true if we are in a goal state. Then, of course, we need to determine the costs of actions in a cost function. For each state, we need to have a function that returns a set of actions that is applicable in a state. And of course, for any state, we want to know its child state. So let's assume that we have an action A that is applicable to the state S. Then we want to have a method that computes the transition for us and tells us what the outcome state S prime is. And this outcome state S prime then actually takes us to the next node in this search graph. So let's look at slide 14. So when we think further about the implementation of search problems, then of course we somehow need to maintain the search nodes. So for the node N, we need to have the state description. Then we need to know the parent. So from where did we come? What was the predecessor state and the predecessor node in the search tree? Then we need to know the action that was applied to the parent to generate the node. And we want to have the path costs. So how were expensive were our action selections to travel from the initial state to the current node in this search. So once we search through this graph, we also want to be able to extract solutions and children nodes. So let's assume we are in state N and our goal test has succeeded, then of course we want to be able to extract the solution that we've constructed so far up to reaching this node N. So this means we must be able to actually collect the path from the initial state to node N and also getting all the actions that were executed along this path. Furthermore, we want to generate children of a node. So let's assume we decide to apply a certain action in a node N. Then we need a method that actually computes the transition from state S stored in the node N to the successor state, and it also constructs a new node in the graph. So the problem is the same, but the child state, of course, is now obtained by executing the transition function. We set the parent of n prime to n. We set the action to action A, and we also incrementally sum up the costs. So we add the cost of the current action to the past. Furthermore, we have operations on a so-called open list. On slide 16, we introduce some more important concepts to talk about search problems. So you can imagine that once we travel through a state space, then we always have a number of states that we have already visited, and there are other states which we haven't yet explored. We call this the open list. So starting from our current node, we see and have a number of potential child nodes, and we have a so-called frontier of our search. So we have a test on this frontier. So once there are no elements in this frontier anymore, then we have this function empty return true. So we look at this and subsequently in more detail. Then we have a function that allows us to return a next possible state in this frontier. So it takes the first element of the open list and removes that element from the list. But we can also insert elements into the frontier of the search space. So let's look subsequently how we'll actually work with such a frontier in search algorithms. So on slide 70, we dive a little bit deeper into different descriptions. So here is the white box description. So the Rust book by Russell and Novick uses a travel example of an agent traveling around in Romania. So the agent looks for a route from Arad to Bucharest. And you see down here a map that shows various Romanian cities and the distances between these cities. The state of this search problem are described through this map with the cities. We have an initial state, which is a particular city. The agent will be in some current city, and there is a goal state, which is described by a city name. Actions are trips between the cities, and they are depicted by edges. Action costs are given as distance information on the edges. So you see immediately that this is a problem that does not have unit costs, but as we defined, we only consider positive costs, which is very natural because here the distances between the cities are different, but they are of course positive. So our agent is looking for a solution that gives it a pass from Arad to Bucharest. And of course, very often we are interested in shorter paths that, for example, either minimize travel time or travel distances. Here we have no time information given, but we have only distance information. So an optimal solution for this search problem would be to find a path from the initial state, in this example Arad, to the goal state Bucharest, with shorted path costs. Let's look at another white box description, the vacuum cleaner agent. So our little vacuum cleaner lives in a very simple world. It only has two possible rooms, two positions, and in these rooms it can sense whether there is dirt or no dirt. So this leads to eight possible world states. So if you look here on the right, you see that the vacuum cleaner can be, for example, in the left room, and dirt can be in both rooms or in one of the rooms, or there can be no dirt at all. And in the right hand column, the vacuum cleaner is in the right room, and the dirt again is distributed as on the left. Our vacuum cleaner has three possible actions. It can either move left or right, or it can suck. So it can actually remove dirt. Its goal is, of course, to have no dirt in the rooms, and its pass costs can be computed by summing up the action costs. And here we also assume there is just one unit per action. So this is in fact a problem where we have unit costs. So moving left or right costs one, and sucking dirt away is also costing one unit. An explicit description of this problem is given on slide 19. So here you see the eight possible states of the state space be linked with all the possible transitions between the states. And you can easily imagine that for the simple variant of the problem, we can fit this on one slide. But as, for example, if you add four more rooms, then this would immediately explode. So let's take a look at the upper half of this graph. So on the left side, the agent is in the left room. We have dirt in both rooms. So what can it do? It could try to move left. We've defined this action in a way that if it's in the left room and it tries to move left, it will simply stay where it is. So moving left does not change anything. Then the agent can move right, which takes us to the state depicted in the same line on the right. Or the agent could also move back. Once being on the right-hand side, then of course moving right again will just cause the agent remain in the same state. Alternatively, the agent can start sucking, and this would take it to one of the middle states. So let's assume it's on the left, in the left room. Now it sucks, which means the agent stays in the left room, but the dirt goes away. If it sucks again, nothing changes. So it will suck a clean room, and this means the room stays clean. So you see that in this graph, we have a lot of loops, and where the agent actually can execute actions, which also cost one unit, but it will not take it closer to the goal. So such a behavior would not be harmful in this example, but it will consume or accumulate costs, or for example by consuming energy also, and will therefore lead to non-optimal solutions. On the other hand, you see that the agent cannot really go back. So when we assume that it starts in a world with two dirty rooms, it can only either move in this world, or once it sucks, it actually moves closer to the goal where we want to have both rooms cleaned. So if the agent had some way to create dirt, or if we had another agent actually creating dirt, then of course we would have very different transitions. But as we said in the beginning, we consider single agent problems, and the world is static, it does not change. So once the vacuum cleaner has removed dirt, then the room will stay clean. So let's look a little bit further how search trees build up when we explore a state space graph. So on slide 20, you see what can happen in the Romania travel example. So the initial state is the node for the city Arad. From this city, we have three potential trips that we can make. We can go to Sibiu, Timisoara, or Tsirind. So after we've expanded Arad and added its child nodes, then we see the graph in the middle. And of course, here we consider a sequential description of the visiting order, and this is the search tree. So it's very important to understand that usually state spaces are graphs. Some can also be trees if we have very limited ways of executing actions. But in general, we are searching a state space graph. But the search tree is a description of the sequential visiting order. So the search always generates a tree over the state space graph. So let's assume our agent decides to go to Sibiu. So from Sibiu, again, it has four possible options. It can go back to Arad, or it can visit three new cities, Fagaras, Oradea, and Rimniciu-Vilcea. So Arad is specific. We've been already in Arad, but of course nothing prevents us from going back, and we call this a repeated state. Of course, you can immediately imagine going back doesn't take you necessarily to your goal. And of course, it adds costs. So traveling through repeated states cannot really lead us to an optimal solution. Here you also see now the frontier of the search. The frontier of this search tree are all the nodes that we have expanded but not yet explored. So in fact, we still have two options where we know that we can reach these cities from Arad, and we have three more cities that we can actually explore from Sibiu. Now let's, on slide 21, summarize more terminology to discuss search algorithms. So as we already discussed a little bit, we have search nodes. So a search node contains the state description plus some information how it was reached. We have path costs, which we usually denote by the letter G. So on some node N, we have actually the costs GN, which means these are the costs that we have accumulated when starting building up a path from the initial state to the node N. Then we have also optimal costs, G star. This is the cost of an optimal solution path for any state S. G star S is the cost of the cheapest path reaching S. So whenever you see the star notation, this means we talk minimal costs for minimization problems or maximal costs in case we wanted to maximize something, for example, the reward of an agent or the win. And in any case, we consider this as optimal costs marked with a star. Then we need the concept of node expansion. So being in a node, we need to generate all the successors of a node by applying all actions which are applicable to the node state S. So we take the state description that we have in this node, we check which actions are applicable in this state, and for all the applicable actions S, we generate their successor states S prime. So then we say the state S has been expanded, because we know what all its possible child nodes can, or child nodes can be, and successor states. You can imagine that we can do this in very different ways, and that's why we talk about a search strategy. This is a method for deciding which node we want to expand next. And the strategy takes two important lists as a basis for further decisions. First, we have the set of all nodes that are currently candidates for expansions. We call this the frontier. And we have a so-called closed list. This is the set of all states that were already expanded, so which we visited already. We use this list in graph search, not in tree search, and we also call this the explored set. So we'll discuss the important difference between graph search and tree search next, because when you just remember this example with the little vacuum cleaner, we have to search a graph there, and you also have seen that we can execute some actions which take us back to the same state. So this means that we remain in a state in the explored set. And if we do this all the time, then we will accumulate a lot of costs but never reach the goal. So it makes a lot of sense for an agent, when it has to search a state space which is a graph, to keep a so-called closed list, to know which rooms were visited, or for the Romania travel example, we want to know which cities we have visited. So let's again look at these important concepts. So here we again on slide 22, we see the repeated states. Repeated states lead to loopy paths, and loopy paths can never contribute to the optimal solution, as we have already discussed, because in action spaces with or search problems with positive action costs, it means that any loop accumulates costs, but it doesn't take us closer to the goal. We can also talk about redundant paths. So let's imagine that we have two possible paths from one city to another. Here you see as an example an extract of the map. We have two possibilities to reach Bucharest once we are in Sibiu. We can either travel via Fagaras and the lower part of the graph, or via the two cities at the bottom. If we look at the length of these trips, then we see that the trip via Fagaras is costing us 310 units. In fact, these are the aerial distances between the cities. And the one on the lower part visits two cities, but is in fact shorter. With this, let me end podcast one for the lecture on systematic and uninformed search.